This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
Every time we do a show about transportation, I keep hoping to hear we're getting close to the time of flying cars. Sadly, today's experts don't seem to have any news about that, but there are some other amazing things coming toward tomorrow's highways, like having your car automatically tell state government, hey, fix that pothole, or city traffic lights sending you messages to help you get more green lights and fewer red or yellow. Hybrid and electric vehicles that will go further, longer for less, even innovations to get drivers less attached to their cell phones and more focused on the road. We've got a battery scientist, a smart roads researcher, and a public policy specialist here to tell us more. And it looks like Virginia's Secretary of Transportation is going to join in for part of the conversation, too. Of course, your thoughts about the future of transportation will also be most welcome right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The intersection between transportation and the future is our focus today. And if you have thoughts about that, you're welcome to join the conversation at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. A little bit later in the hour, we expect to be talking with a man who oversees all mobility modalities in the Commonwealth, Virginia's Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. But we start with three other guests who've been giving much thought to the future. Joining in from a studio in Charlottesville, the man in charge of the Center for Transportation Studies based at the University of Virginia, Brian Smith. Dr. Smith, thank you for making time for us.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Here with me in the Insight Studios in Harrisonburg, an energy storage scientist who's been working on future high-powered batteries for automobiles, especially hybrids and electric vehicles, Greg Koenig, plus our go-to guy whenever we have complicated questions about public policy, political scientist and government policy guru Bob Roberts. Gentlemen, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Actually, that's Gary Koenig, but just to...
Did I say Greg?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Gary.
It's all right, okay. Though.
Well, that's good. No, that's a very good sign that throughout the show you're going to correct me. That's one of the reasons we want to make sure we have a scientist in the studio. But let's go to Brian Smith, starting with you, Brian, if I could. Yeah, you've been working on a variety of what might be called smart systems for both cars and roadways. So can you give us a hint of what might be coming down the pike in those realms?
Sure. You know, I think in the future we're going to see that we're using all of the investment we put into our transportation infrastructure, into the roads, into the transit systems, into our individual vehicles, and we're going to be able to make these all work better together. We're going to see that as, you know, if you look at how we've done things in the past, we're really using relatively old technology. Telling people to stop and go, we use red and green lights, and we use red stop signs, and vehicles travel around more or less independently. You know, you might use a turn signal. Sometimes people use certain gestures they like to use to inform others of how they think they're driving. The idea here is to truly try to help each other and help the government to make the system work better, to make it safer, to make it more efficient, to make it more predictable. So, for example, as you're traveling on the highways, your vehicle might hit potholes, for example. Well, there are accelerometers or sensors in your vehicle that are sensing that information to help the vehicle work better. That information could be sent to the government, and now the government will know where the potholes are and can better maintain the highways. On the other hand, or likewise, the government might send information to your vehicle telling you how the traffic signals are set, so that you can make sure you travel at a speed that you're going to hit the green lights, as opposed to going from signal to signal, stopping and starting and polluting the air and burning more gas. So
Brian, how would that work? Yeah. If I'm traveling 29 in Charlottesville and I'm trying to get from the University of Virginia up north of Walmart, and sometimes I manage to hit all the green lights and sometimes I seem to manage to hit all the red lights. Are you telling me that some sort of mechanism could be in place that's going to send me information that says if you travel at a certain speed, you'll get mostly green lights?
Exactly. You know, VDOT does a lot of work to time the signal to try to get the maximum amount of traffic through that corridor. And that information is all stored in the computers that control those signals. That data can be pushed out, broadcast out, for example, perhaps via cellular frequencies, and your vehicle can get that information, and then you'll get a display saying, hey, if you slow down to 41 miles an hour or 39 miles an hour, whatever the case may be, you're going to hit the green band, as it's called, and travel all the way to Walmart, like you said. So it's just getting a little more information to the driver so that they can operate in a more informed way and use the system better.
I hate to throw some water on the fire here.
But... Oh, Bob Roberts, go right ahead.
But the dilemma we face, let's say your car identifies the pothole.
Right.
The state may not have the money to fix it. And in other words, technology is expensive. We all know that. And the dilemma we're facing now is that there's a fight within the technology and infrastructure environment. Where is the money to go? Do we put the money in the technology to in a sense, say we don't need as much new infrastructure? And the infrastructure people saying we want more infrastructure and maybe we don't need as much technology. And they don't always seem to be talking to each other.
That is very true. The thing that I think we forget sometimes, though, is that it's not necessarily an either-or situation. From a technology point of view, the technology we're talking about is the same technology that most of us have in our pockets right now in a smartphone. The pothole detection can happen through smartphone apps. It don't have to be new technology that people purchase. And we also can't forget that VDOT, like every other DOT, spends quite a bit of money testing the quality of roadways. Identifying where potholes are. If instead of VDOT sending out their forces to find potholes or to test pavement roughness for maintenance, why not have all of us who are driving on the roads every day report back to VDOT and save them that money? So in some cases, the investment in the technology actually can reduce the cost of how we traditionally maintain the infrastructure. And one of the things that we often forget, VDOT, like most DOTs, spends more money on maintenance now than they do on construction. Right. That's where the money really goes.
Yeah. Gary Koenig, energy storage scientist, which means one of the things that you look for is improved batteries for electric and hybrid cars in the future.
Correct.
So how come we don't all have electric cars now?
Well, I think that when you look from a performance basis, there are a number of electric vehicles that could, beat a Ferrari or a high-performance vehicle off the line or take you a few hundred miles. But for the general or average consumer to be able to afford these really sort of large batteries that could give you reasonable ranges is just currently not cost competitive with a lot of other more traditional vehicles that you could purchase.
And therefore the question is, how long will it take to get the cost of these vehicles down? Or does the government have to, like they were, subsidized them?
Bob Roberts, aren't you the guy who's been here before, which is one of the reasons why we invite you when we talk policy issues, because you know the history on this stuff. Haven't you said before that one of the reasons we have cheap gas is because for many decades in the 20th century, the federal government offered huge subsidies to oil companies and exploration companies to make gas cheaper and more affordable?
And more than that, the federal government built a highway system that almost put the railroads out of business. In other words, subsidized the internal combustion engine by building a massive interstate highway system that made it possible for all these carbon-burning vehicles to take off, where they could have used, other countries have used much more electric, other alternatives. We put all our money into the hydrocarbon-burning machines, and that's what we have now. So there's always been a governmental policy involved in that.
So why so much opposition to more government money going in to the kind of work that Gary is doing that would give us cheaper electric cars and hybrid vehicles?
Because the belief is that the private sector should fund everything and not the government. That somehow the private investment is the answer and public investment is somehow wasteful. And therefore, if we use public dollars, we get no return on our money. And if we use private dollars, we do.
Is that another way of saying we have short memories?
Yes, we do.
Well, most people who think about gazing into the future probably do not do so, wishing that they could see how transportation systems might be different in the years ahead. Still, if you listening would be willing to do such crystal ball gazing, we'd love to hear how you think things could change when it comes to getting around in the future. Maybe you even got some suggestions for some improvements you'd like to see made.
Our phone lines are open at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Our guests, chemical engineer and energy storage researcher from the University of Virginia, Gary Koenig, civil engineer and head of the Center for Transportation Studies at UVA, Brian Smith, and from James Madison University's Department of Political Science, public policy watcher Bob Roberts. Brian Smith, what are you most excited about that's going to be different in terms of smart transportation 10 years from now?
What I'm most excited about is that we're going to have, you know, many options for travel. We far too often think about traveling, it just means hopping into your car. But, you know, there are transit systems, there are rail, buses, pedestrian modes. And right now we have very little information to really trade off how we travel. So to me, the ability to know the cost, to know the options, to know the performance, will help us make better decisions as travelers. And that's not 10 years from now. I think that's just, you know, 5 or fewer. So that I'm excited about that and the ability to really help us use this system that we have much more effectively.
First call coming in from Newmarket. Alex, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
This is sort of a long story, but my father wrote a book in 1956 called The Sun, the Sea, and Tomorrow, and it was all about renewables. And he said that what we're burning today in the way of fossil fuels and also uranium are not renewable. But you could make a renewable source of oil out of bacteria or algae. Now, this was in 1956. I get home from London and I find an article in New Scientist about growing oil out of bacteria. And this is a renewable source. If you have an electric car, it still has to be plugged into the electric grid, which is using fossil fuels.
Yeah, so it's true that...
This is Gary.
Yeah,
Gary,
oh, this is Gary
Koenig.
Yes, Gary Koenig. It's true that with any electric vehicle, if you're talking about the overall efficiency and how it's going to reduce carbon emissions, you do need to consider what the original source of that electricity is. So, I mean, if you're going off of a coal-fired power plant and then that electricity has to go through the grid and there's some losses associated with that, there's some loss associated with how efficient your battery is at charging and discharging. So you do need to consider the overall picture. Now, with the biofuels from organisms, there's a lot of research looking into doing that, and I think that's an exciting field, and it might be an option, for instance, especially algal biofuel, maybe for diesel. But one could imagine that even some of those carbon-generated sources could be used to provide electricity that could be used to to power an electric vehicle. So maybe they can even intertwine.
They can be grown in brackish or salty water, and they use land that nothing else can grow on, unlike the corn for ethanol.
In principle, you can take advantage of even wastewater remediation for algal biofuels. There's always a trade-off. There's always a trade-off between sort of control. With sort of controlling the environment that the algae is in, which can generally be more costly, and productivity. But it's an exciting area of research as well.
Alex, do you know if your father's book got published?
Oh, yes, it was published in 1956.
And do you remember the title?
It was called The Sun, the Sea, and Tomorrow.
And is it still around?
I don't think you can get it anymore. My father's name was F as in Frank, G as in George, Walton Smith. And he wrote it with a gentleman called Henry Chapin, whose wife taught me chess.
Wow. Well, Alex, I'm sorry that we're going to hit the break here, but we sure are glad to have heard from you and to have learned that, more than 50 years ago, somebody was talking about things that we're still talking about today and hoping for improvements on today. We're going to continue with this discussion about the future of transportation on Virginia Insight in just a bit more than 60 seconds. And Alex, thanks once again. The future of transportation, our focus. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham, and joining us now by phone, the man who oversees all of the Commonwealth's government action on transportation, Virginia's Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. Mr. Secretary, welcome back to the Insight Airwaves.
Tom, thank you very much for having me.
Well, Sean, if I could, I want to take you back to a conversation you and I had almost 2 years ago when the topic was distracted driving, especially distractions caused by cell phones. And back then, your department was embarking on an ambitious program aimed at employers, the idea being that if you could get businesses telling their workers to stay off the phone as much as possible while they were driving, that might have a big impact. So I'm curious, how has that initiative worked out?
You know, interestingly enough, it actually was a big success. I mean, we targeted primarily the employers on the Capitol Beltway, obviously in the Tyson's Corner area, the Dulles Corridor, and Arlington, primarily because of the fact that we had so many construction projects going on up there between the new 495 express lanes, as well as the Dulles Rail, as well as some other projects. That, you know, we were doing numbers, the surveys with AAA and the contractors up there, and we were shocked to see how many people in these construction zones that not only addition we have construction, we had 200,000 vehicles a day going through some of these areas, and the number of people that were texting and driving was more than a majority of the people driving in the area. Went after the employers, I'm going to say cooperate with the employers, asked them to really try to educate their workers. And incredibly, we started seeing a decline in the numbers of people who were texting and driving and distracted driving. And so it does go to indicate that, you know, if we can educate people, make them start to think more and more about the fact that you know, they're driving a vehicle that's a half a ton heavy, and they're doing 60 miles an hour, and just taking their eyes off the road just for a couple seconds to look at a text could end up having catastrophic impacts.
Sean Connaughton, is it possible that you were also educating not only drivers but employers? Because I suspect that there are a fair number of workers who feel sometimes pressured by the business they work for to get as much business as they can done on the phone while they're in their car.
That's right. In fact, that's where part of this was about. It wasn't just simply the employers getting to their employees. It was about getting to the employers and getting them to understand the impacts of some of the pressures that that they are having on their employees, that they demand instant responses to texts and emails that go out. And the employers actually, they really did work very, very cooperatively with us. And it's been a big success, so much so that actually this campaign is starting to go nationwide, essentially no phones, orange cones, no phones. And it's something that we are very happy that it started out here in Virginia.
Well, the intersection between the future and transportation is our focus this hour. If you've got any thoughts about that or a question to ask that you haven't yet heard us address, you're welcome to add your voice to this conversation at 888-WMRA-TALK. Secretary of Transportation Sean Connaughton can only stay with us for about another 10 minutes, so if you have a question specifically for him, it's a good thing that we do have at least one line open at the moment, and it would be a good thing if you'd call for him right now. Our other guests are going to be around for a little bit longer, but you're welcome to ask them questions as well. Next call coming in from Harrisonburg. This is Mike. Mike, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment, please. Hey, Mike,
hey,
you there? Yeah.
Yeah, I am. Hello.
Please go ahead.
Okay, I was just wondering whatever happened to the smart road up in Blacksburg.
Actually, the road is still there. It is part of, I think it's 460 that the state has funded. That smart road is actually operated in partnership with Virginia Tech, and they are using it for all different types of research, and research both on road construction and operations. But also they use it to test new vehicles and new types of safety equipment on vehicles because the smart road actually can create rain, snow, all different types of driving conditions over the this bridge that we built there. And it's actually been a great success and has attracted. It's become a very big economic development driver out there for Virginia Tech, which the center there for research has really grown with the number of auto manufacturers and others who are doing all different types of research. So the road's there. It's being used each and every day. It's doing an incredible amount of research. Eventually, we will take it back over, and we will use it actually as a four-lane divided highway in connection with, I think, the 460 project.
Sean, this is Bob Roberts.
Just a second, Bob. Mike, thank you so much for a great question. Dr. Roberts, please go ahead.
Yeah. Virginia faces a serious shortfall in funds for transportation. I think you'd probably agree with that, that it needs more money. The question is, what mix do you foresee as the appropriate fix for that issue? In other words, more toll roads, which the state is discussing, higher gas taxes, indexing gas taxes. All those are very controversial ways to fund transportation in Virginia. Does your administration have a preference for all of those or none of them, or what mix?
Well, the governor, in many ways, our administration, the governor's McDonald's administration, has really been very forthright about some of the challenges we're facing with funding. And we've taken almost an all-of-the-above approach. You look at things like bringing more innovation into our operations, public-private partnerships, tolling, and commercialization, or I'm going to say, monetization of some of our assets. Like if you go to the rest stops, you'll see the little Geico gecko there. They're paying us money to help sponsor the rest stops. And so we're doing a little bit of everything. The governor is very committed this year to bringing a package to the General Assembly that will look at new revenues and existing revenues to try and get at least $500 million a year into the transportation program per year starting in 4 or 5 years. So the governor intends to unveil that in a couple of weeks, right prior to the General Assembly session. And it's something that, he understands very much. He was brought up in Northern Virginia, then lived in Hampton Roads, which are the two most congested areas of the state. He's very committed to trying to bring in a package forward.
With us by phone, Virginia Secretary of Transportation Sean Connaughton, who can only be with us for a few more minutes, and then our sort of more permanent guests with us from a studio in Charlottesville, University of Virginia Smart Transportation Technology researcher Brian Smith, here with me in the Insight Studio in Harrisonburg, University of Virginia, energy storage, including the kind of storage used in electric car batteries, energy storage scientist Gary Koenig, as well as our go-to public policy analyst from James Madison University, Bob Roberts. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We have a question here on Facebook from Lauren that's probably for you, Mr. Secretary. She says, please, please, please get trucks off the highway and onto trains, and maybe some people out of cars and onto trains, too. Response?
Well, we put it, the state is one of, Virginia is one of the few states that actually have a fund dedicated to making rail improvements, both for freight and for passenger rail. And so we've been, sort of at the forefront in trying to do that as a state. The state has put money into rail enhancements for Norfolk Southern, CSX, as well as some of the short lines. To find ways to get trucks off the road and move it on to freight. Unfortunately, I think most people understand that economics as such for freight rail is that it has to move a certain amount of miles away from the destination for it to be economical to move it by rail versus truck. But we're trying to do everything we can to make it easy to make that modal switch. When it comes to passenger rail, we have a really exciting future for intercity passenger rail. One of the things that we did was we created an intercity passenger rail fund that we're taking money from the various surpluses we've gotten the last couple of years. We put money into that fund. That has enabled us to run the service from Lynchburg to Washington, which is one of the only passenger rail services in the country that actually is making money. We started a service from Richmond up to Washington, which was very successful. And just last week, we started the first passenger rail service from Norfolk out of the Norfolk area in almost 35 years. And so that service we know is going to be a big success because people will be able to get on the train in Norfolk, go all the way up to Washington initially, then potentially stay on that same train and go as far as Boston. So we are very much committed to, we recognize, in fact, one of the things we keep on trying to do is what we keep on saying is modal shifts. Look for opportunities where it's cheaper for us to maybe put some money into a rail operation than it is to build or widen an existing road. We're doing that with a barge service that we're running from Norfolk up to the Port of Richmond, which the state has taken over from the city. That service has taking 6,000 to 7,000 trucks off of I-64 every year. And so it's looking for these opportunities where maybe just for $1 million or $2 or whatever, we can actually get trucks off the road, get people off the road, which will have some impact on our congestion problem.
Virginia Transportation Secretary Sean Connaughton, before you go, if I could, Sean, I'd like to ask a follow-up to what Bob Roberts was asking earlier. Has to do with the gas tax, which last was increased in Virginia more than 25 years ago, back in 1986. I think it went up a nickel then to its current place where it stayed for more than 25 years, at 17.5 cents. In North Carolina, the gas tax is about double that. There have been a number of studies about states around Virginia, but the one that I most recall was in the newspaper, The Pilot, earlier this year, where they said that what they found is that although the gas tax in North Carolina is 17 cents more than it is in Virginia, the average price of gas in North Carolina is only 2 cents higher, leading to speculation that what our super low gas tax is doing is simply lining the pockets of oil companies. Any possibility that they're onto something there?
Well, listen, you have to think about the fact that you have transportation costs. Most of the refineries, obviously, in the Gulf of Mexico, and the further north you go, the more obviously expensive it is to move that gasoline. That's part of it. Part of it's the way they do pricing. They do zoning pricing. But listen, our issue, though, I'm going to say, when it comes to the gas tax, is twofold. The first is that, as you mentioned, we have not raised it since 1986. So that means that 17.5 cents per gallon of gas tax buys about 8 cents worth of maintenance, because most of that money goes towards our maintenance account. So just due to inflation. So you're looking at...
So what you're saying, and I think the governor mentioned this recently too, is that in 1986 dollars, what we're getting on the gas tax today is only 8 cents.
That's right. That's okay. Exactly right. Now, but we also have this other problem that is that obviously some of the people on your show today and the woman who just was commenting earlier about biofuels and whatever, and that is the fact that we are seeing both much higher gas mileage standards. It's not just the standards. I mean, we are already seeing much higher fuel efficiency on most vehicles. We're seeing the introduction of alternative fuel vehicles. We're seeing the introduction of electric vehicles, which look like and act like any other vehicle on the road, except that they don't pay any gas taxes at all. We can trace that just in the last year that our gas miles collected per vehicle miles traveled went down about 6.4%. And so we have a inflation problem, but we also have a structural problem that's happening with the gas tax, that as we move forward to new CAFE standards that are, 52 miles per gallon, and you look at more and more alternative fuel vehicles out there, that you're going to start seeing the very fundamentals of our transportation funding system being completely undermined. And that's what the governor is wrestling with, and we are in the administration wrestling with now, is coming up with some sort of proposal that deals with, you know, the current revenues, but also looking out into the future as to how do we deal with cars getting 50 and more per gallon and more alternative fuel vehicles. In fact, even the state...
So part of what you're saying is you simply cannot depend on the gas tax, no matter what rate it's at, in as you go into the future.
That's right. I mean, if you just start to think about it, 1986, everyone focuses on the inflation factor for where we are today versus 1986. Think about the fact that what were cars getting miles per gallon back in 1986? 8 to 10 miles per gallon. Yeah. Now they're getting, you know, you can buy most cars when you go out and buy them, they're between 25 and 35 miles per gallon. So then we're going to go up to 52 miles per gallon. What is so to catch up on inflation is one thing, but then you're going to have to catch up on what you're buying and how many the volume of gas that you're purchasing. You'd have to move that gas tax up, you know, 4 to 5 times.
Sean Connaughton, Virginia Secretary of Transportation. We've already kept you longer, Sean, than your staff said that we should, but only by 2 minutes. So thank you for all the time that you spent with us, including that extra 2 minutes. Have a great
Excellent.
Day, sir.
Hey, you take care now. Bye-bye.
Take care. We've got now a call coming in from Rockingham County. I believe this is Bishop. Bishop, your question or comment for our remaining guests, Gary Koenig, Brian Smith, and or Bob Roberts, please.
Yes, it's too bad the secretary left. I had a solution for his gas tax problem.
Well, please offer it. We'd be happy to pass it on.
Yeah.
Well, you could outfit cars with current technology, GPS, GIS, and cellular or black box technology, and monitor the number of miles each car went per year, and tie the their tax to that. You could also monitor their compliance with the speed laws and with other traffic regulatory requirements, and give the owner an incentive to reduce his transportation-related fees by being compliant with all those traffic laws and penalize those that we're not compliant. And all of this technology is available. We all have it and look at it daily in our...
Well, Bob Roberts, I think there's actually been some talk about this, including taxing based on number of miles driven.
Oh, yeah. The environmental movement has argued that if your footprint on the environment, if you're driving cars, and that if you're using more fossil fuels, you should pay for it. The problem with that is... There's a serious problem with it from an equity concept, is that many of those people who commute the longest distances do so for economic cost of living increases, housing is cheaper farther out, and therefore you wouldn't be tying that to their income levels, and therefore it could have a terribly regressive impact on people because it's effectively a flat tax, and therefore that issue has not been dealt with adequately. How do you deal with people who are poor, who have to use cars for long distances, and they will be taxed at the same rate as someone who's very wealthy.
Bishop, did you have a question, too, or did you just want to make that point?
Well, that's not really the point that I wanted to make.
Well, we're going to hit the break, Bishop, so if you could hold on. When we get back, we'd be happy to hear the other point that you wanted to make. We're going to continue here on Virginia Insight, looking at the future of transportation, including your thoughts on it, if you're willing to offer them. We'll be back in about a minute. Bob Roberts researches and teaches public policy at James Madison University. Brian Smith researches and teaches about transportation systems at the University of Virginia. Also from UVA, energy storage systems researcher Gary Koenig. To you who are listening, how safe do you feel when you're out on the highway? Is that level of safety any different now than it was 10 or even 20 years ago? That's one of the issues that we're looking at as we consider the future of transportation. And our phone lines are open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. But we still got Bishop from Rockingham County on the line with a Part B question. Bishop, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, simply making the point that we already have the technology that would be needed to regulate traffic and provide both positive and negative incentives for people to comply with traffic. You could save tens of millions of dollars per year in traffic safety regulation, eliminate a lot of the state police requirements. And you could do that with GPS, GIS, and black box technology, or a real-time transmission of the data via cellular technology.
I'm go ahead, Brian. You were the one I was going to call on.
This is Brian Smith. Bishop, you're right. The technology is there to do a lot of the things you're talking about. That's what's actually quite fascinating about working in this area, because it's not just a technical issue, it's also a societal issue, a political issue. You know, what are we as a country and as a state willing to do? We're used to paying user fees now. That's what the gas tax is. The more you drive, the more gas you burn, the more tax you pay. But I think people often forget the fact that when they put a gallon of gas in the car, they're actually paying for the roads they're using. I guess I would ask Bob, is how can we make a political deal, I guess is the right term, to move to a different way of paying for this infrastructure?
See, my view is because of equity concerns, because of the fact that you shouldn't be pushing an equal tax burden on people who have different wealth and ability to pay, that you have to use general revenues for this. In other words, you have to be willing to raise your general sales tax, you have to be willing to raise your income tax to fund these programs versus this archaic, in my view, user fee system. Now, on the other hand, the idea of punishing people for abusive driving practices through technology is fine. In other words, it would be a deterrent for people violating the law, and that can clearly be done using technology.
So the kind of thing that Bishop was
absolutely
suggesting.
Absolutely. Because in a sense, those people are posing a burden on society. If they're driving drunk, for example, we could have cars that can identify whether they're get into a vehicle with alcohol. So in a sense, we have that, and that's fine. But to impose the cost of infrastructure when it's a societal good across the board on people, regardless of their wealth, I think is just not fair. And therefore, we have the ability to raise general revenue and fund these, but we don't want to do it that way. In other words, we want to impose the same burden on people regardless of their wealth, which I think is just wrong.
And, Bishop, thanks so much for your call. I'm sorry, Brian, I couldn't just see you over there in Charlottesville. Please go ahead.
Yeah. I'm waving my arms. Just to jump in here, if you don't have a user fee, and I understand your issues about regressive taxes, but then the issue is that people are using this service and there's no consequence for how much. And one of the big concerns right now is pollution,
right,
and the fact that we've spent so much of our funds to build this infrastructure. How can you reconcile that without actually having a direct cost to using the system?
Oh, I agree. But to me, that issue is dealt with by simply not building the roads. In other words, instead of building more roads, you put your money into mass transit. In other words, you put the resources so people will simply not. In other words, as an incentive, if you're in a traffic jam and you've got alternative mass transit, that's a real incentive to take the mass transit. In other words, that instead of building the road,
but you have to have the alternative,
right? So you have to fund you have to fund through general taxes the alternative.
So Bob or maybe
this
Brian,
is Gary Cohn.
Yeah. Hey, this is Gary. Do you see any sort of pushback with regards to privacy with any of these smart types of systems?
There's a huge pushback in terms of privacy, and we're used to really quite a lot of privacy in terms of how we travel, and there's also a government issue. We tend to gladly give up privacy for convenience in terms of how we buy things with credit cards, for example. But that's, when you have the government involved, people get very concerned very quickly, particularly when you're talking about enforcement. And that's been a big issue in terms of technology. Most of the technology we've talked about in transportation has not been enforcement related, simply because people in general aren't too keen to give up that privacy.
In Maryland, for example, if you drive through Maryland, so Virginia Heights, who happen to go through Maryland sometime.
Warning, warning,
warning, warning, warning, warning. is that you get having drive maybe too fast in Virginia. In Maryland, they've got these speed cameras all over the place. So in a sense, you're driving down the road and you're going a few miles over the speed. This is not on just red light. This is all over the place. So you end up getting tickets in the mail saying you've exceeded the speed limit. And so in certain states, they're used to it. In other words, for general enforcement. So I'm not sure the vast majority of the American people would be that much concerned using that technology for that purpose to enforce the rules, drunk drivers. I still think there is much. It's much too easy to say let's put tolls on the roads, let's put more higher user fees, without understanding that this puts a very, very heavy burden on the poor elements of society. And I recognize...
Well, we've heard from all three voices now on this subject. So if there's another voice belonging to somebody listening who has a 2 cents or more to offer, we've got phone lines open for a few more minutes here on Virginia Insight at 888-WMRA. Talk. The other way you can reach us is through our Facebook page, where we are listed on Facebook as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And on Facebook, we got this from Jessica, who says, completely different topic. Says, a few weeks ago, you had a guest talking about the amazing things some parts of the world were doing to get almost everyone onto bicycles. Why can't we do that here? Oh, I remember this was Peter Norton from the engineering school at the University of Virginia, although he's a historian in the engineering school.
That's correct.
And I think he was talking, among other things, about... Copenhagenizing, because it's the place that first did this in the 1970s, where they actually built huge garages for bicycles. I think, if I remember the word correctly, there's something like Flutesflots, apartments for bicycles, and everybody travels by bicycle. But Peter was also talking about several countries in South America, I think, where it's almost abnormal to be riding a motorized vehicle, that most people travel by bicycle.
Yeah, I think we should have asked the transportation secretary about some of the electrically or fossil fuel powered vehicles. But I think the challenge there is probably being in an area where you have appropriate density of people, where you can easily get between your home and your grocery store via bicycle. It would be a little bit of a hike for me to get to the nearest, to get to work, for example.
And those European cities haven't seen the same sprawl we have. Yeah. And I think the dilemma you face in like Harrisonburg, where we have a lot of very bicyclists who would love to have, how do you get the bicycles not to collide with the vehicles, which is the major problem we face. So I agree, it's a good alternative to look for more of a more alternative transportation areas.
Brian Smith, when we look at these smart transportation systems of the future, are we making more room for bicycles and pedestrians?
We are, and we're trying to find a way to tie them together with other modes well. The reality is many trips aren't a single mode. It's for example, in Northern Virginia, it might be driving to a transit station, hopping on mass transit, and then the last part of your trip would be as a pedestrian or as a bicyclist. And how you tie those together is a difficult thing to deal with. And that's what we're working on with these smart solutions. But so much of this really does come back to how we choose to, where we choose to live and how we choose to live. And I heard the word sprawl. I mean, sprawl has been created because we have roads and vehicles that allow that. And people have chosen to live that way. You do see some change now. There is more dense development in cities and towns, and that's starting to change the commuting patterns to some degree. So we can't magically make bicycles work when people want to live 20 miles from where they work and shop. Distance is distance, and so a lot of this comes down to how we choose to live.
Gary Koenig, I want to ask you a question that I know has got to annoy you, but I'm going to ask anyways.
All right.
We have gotten used to technological changes happening incredibly fast, mostly things related to computers and internet. seems like when it comes to battery storage and electric vehicles, it's been glacially slow by comparison. Why is that? Is that impression completely off?
I wouldn't say that it's completely off. I mean, we're still using lead-acid batteries, and those were first invented around the 1850s. So I think that the challenge is that unlike things like computers or semiconductor technology, where those gains can be made through a lot of the technological advancements in the fabrication process, with battery materials, you're really limited in terms of a chemistry can only do so much energy per mass. And you can do your best to enhance it and to package it as efficiently as possible, but you really, at some point, need to come up with new materials. And that's a pretty big challenge.
Our guest on this edition of Virginia Insight, chemical engineer and energy storage researcher from the University of Virginia, Gary Koenig, civil engineer and head of the Center for Transportation Studies at UVA, Brian Smith, and from James Madison University's Department of Political Science, public policy watcher Bob Roberts. I'm Tom Graham, by the way, and we've got just a couple minutes left for phone calls. So if you have any ideas about the future of transportation or a question to ask related to that topic, please do call us at 888-967-2825. Brian Smith, the man we cannot see over in that studio in Charlottesville, what have we missed? What haven't I yet asked you that you're just burning to have a chance to talk about your work?
I think it's that we I think much too quickly fall into patterns of thinking about technology as good or bad, and we heard the secretary, for example, talk about distracted driving, and that certainly is a huge problem. But then we say, well, all smartphones are bad for transportation. And the reality is there are things that we can do to actually make transportation safer based on technology like that. For example, as we're driving around and perhaps seeing these variable message signs on the side of the roadway, and we try to peek around the truck next to us to read what it says and can barely read it, you know, why not have an application on your phone that when you get within a certain proximity of a sign, it reads the sign to you? And, you know, it would cut in over whatever music you're playing, whatever else. And oh, by the way.
So this is audio that comes over your phone.
Audio,
it's not
exactly.
A text message.
Not a text message. It'd be audio. And, you know, not all of us speak English. You could read the sign message in Spanish. And we could create a system this way to provide information to travelers and at some point without building new signs, which are very expensive to build and operate and maintain. So we need to be open, I think, to using the technology that affects our lives every day in new ways to try to help us travel more safely and to help each other to get to our destinations as safely and in a timely manner as possible.
Brian, there's something I've heard you say before that I was struck. It seems as if it's a theme for you in your work. And the quote I have here is, instead of looking at motorists as single individuals, we need to look at this as if we are all in this together. Tell me more about that.
What I mean is I think we can far too easily get in our little metal cocoons of a vehicle, and it's us against the world. And the reality is we all want to arrive, you know, on time. We all want to arrive safely. And we all have information, whether it's, you know, data from our cars or what have you, or as a pedestrian or as a transit rider that we can use to help each other to meet our goals. And that's the idea here. And it doesn't mean we all, you know, join arms and sing kumbaya, but it means that our, you know, the vehicles that we use and the devices that we use can work together to help make this system work more smoothly. Because it really is a system. It's not just a bunch of individual actors. It's a system that works together.
Gary Koenig, battery guy. When are we going to have affordable electric vehicles?
Well, I hope soon, but I think that something that Bob had mentioned earlier, there will definitely be an economy of scale. I mean, with most any sort of chemical process or any product. So I think that the market really does need to mature such that the economies of scale, number of units produced, can get high enough that cost really does come down quite a bit. In fact, all of the projections that you'll see for any sort of DOE for an energy storage technology, they'll have the number where it is, and then, you know, the curve that slopes down pretty pretty sharply depending upon how many units are sold.
But part of what you're looking at, part of what you're researching, part of what you're trying to invent are batteries that are cheaper, mm-hmm. that last longer, that go farther?
Yes, yes. So the real hope, and I think this is also true of a number of other alternative energy technologies for transportation, ideally you would have something that could sort of drop in. So you have your existing battery unit and it has its existing market and you start to make new materials that can swap in for ones that are there that are cheaper or safer or higher energy density such that you can bring the cost down even further.
Well, I think we're all grateful for the work that you were doing and Brian
I think
is doing and maybe
battery.
Even that Bob is doing. Yeah. Our guests have been the director of the Center for Transportation Studies at the University of Virginia, Brian Smith, faculty member in UVA School of Engineering, Gary Koenig, and from James Madison University, professor of political science and public administration, Bob Roberts. Oh, plus earlier in the program, Virginia Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. Thank you, gentlemen, all for making time for us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell and Andrew Windham at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And if you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about all of today's guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.